You don't have to be against the central banks. That's the beauty of Bitcoin, that if you're against central banks, you're putting a target on your back.
It's easy to hope and pray for like some big sweeping change that everyone just completely gets reoriented onto a Bitcoin standard or what have you.
Bitcoin is a bear asset. So if you don't bear it, you don't have it. And that's the thing that we need to protect the whole system from.
The notion of freedom money that you control, that you alone custody and have access to and can use censorship free and permissionlessly as you desire. Like it's like that still hasn't quite sunk in. Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Today on the show, I've got Ivan Makadonsky. Ivan works for Breeze, but he is doing a whole lot of other cool things in the space. We discuss a very interesting, very insightful article that he published in Bitcoin Magazine recently. I think you're going to love that. You got to hang on till the end, though, because we talk about his big project that he's working on in Bulgaria. Lots of exciting things. Really think you're going to enjoy this episode. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Ivan here with me. Ivan, welcome back to the Bitcoin Way podcast. You were one of my first guests, I think maybe the eighth or ninth guest I had on the show.
Yeah, I think it was episode 8. So it was a very good conversation that helped me shape my ideas for an article. And thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. We talked all things Lightning. We'll touch on that. I'm curious. I want to hear an update on Breeze. But you sent me an article that you wrote that was published in Bitcoin Magazine. And it's called the Digit Addiction Pandemic. And I think you hit on something really important here. And by the way, for anyone listening, we're going to get to a special project that Ivan's working on near the end of the episode. Stick around for that. Very exciting stuff. But why don't you give sort of an overview of the article? What prompted you and inspired you to write it? And then I've got some quotes I want you to comment on as well.
Sure. Well, the idea, I would say there are two main ideas there. The first one is exactly what we talked in the first podcast, that Bitcoin is connected to reality. And every time that somebody prints money, this is disconnecting that digit from reality. And I was shaping that idea, my argument in different podcasts, but I love this quote. After I became a writer of articles, I truly understood that it says like this: people think that they think because they think. But if you don't write what you think, you have no idea what you're thinking. So that I really understood after I wrote my first article series, then I expanded into other topics. But man, that is a grueling process. And going back to this particular article, in the core of it is that Bitcoin is connected to reality, and making the analogies why everything else is in some shape or form disconnected to reality. Not all of it, because even the housing market, it's physically connected to reality, but the fiat denominated value, is there's an error code in it, in the price tag of everything, because there's an error code, like we talked last time, into the fiat denominated currency, any of them. And that was one point. And the other point is that how can I make this absolutely clear? And I thought, yes, there are numbers that are also an abstraction, but they are directly connected to reality. Bitcoin is not the first. And those are the digits for time, the digits for length, the digits for weight, and the digits for temperature. And now, for the first time ever, the digit that we'll use to denominate value is connected to reality, and Bitcoin fits that thing. Because if I lie to you, let's say how much something weighs, because the verifying mechanism is decentralized in the minds of all the people and you can verify yourself, that means that you can find out who is lying or not. And now, for the first time, that is going to seep into our economic life. obviously, we as Bitcoiners are ahead of everybody else. But those are the two main ideas. And where I really liked is that I created this narrative of people being an addict and they're becoming addicts because of digit lords and digit dealers. But those were the two ideas and the narrative that I created there. And I'm very happy with the end result.
Yeah, it's a fantastic article. I think, and you hit on a point, I don't know if this is one, I can't remember if this is one you specifically raised in, but you talked about, you know, you've got a means of measuring objectively things like temperature and length and so forth. And Bitcoin, by virtue of being tied to energy, to real world energy, but also its credible scarcity, I think are the two things that allow you to measure value in a meaningful way. And that's something that we've never had. And certainly, I mean, fiat currencies, to your point, are an absolutely impossible to, you know, lock down in terms of their ability to measure anything, because it's not that you invested in real estate and suddenly you got wealthier or you're so smart. It's that they devalued the currency. And so over the course of a few years, your house is worth 50% more. Like, you didn't do anything. If we had a common denominator, a fixed common denominator like Bitcoin, we would begin to figure out where value is actually being created in the world and who was, you know, being productive. So you said that you had a few quotes I want to pull out here. You said those digit addicts usually say, "I can't buy anything with Bitcoin, so I'm not going to buy any." And they're saying, "I am addicted to the benefit of a convenient medium of exchange, even though my purchasing power will deteriorate." So what are the consequences of this mentality? And we'll get to some of the other examples of this mentality, but like, how does that manifest itself in the real world? What are the implications of that mentality that so many people have?
Well, the mentality, I think, like everything comes mainly from habit. Because we are convenient or comfortable in a particular pattern, in a particular place, in particular actions. I think that there were around 50,000 thoughts that we have a day, but the next day, 99% of them are the same. So that's kind of the gravitational pull that everybody has. That's right now, all the infrastructure that the fiat systems created, we're used to it first, but they're still more convenient in more places to be used than the Bitcoin network to be used as a medium of exchange. And because of it, people are very easy to dismiss what Bitcoin is, and either they have to sit down and invest a lot of work of learning what it is, and not only to what it is and HODL like everybody in the Bitcoin space, but actually to spend it to realize that that is also an extremely important case, not just isolate yourself in a bubble. But if you don't do that, at some point, it will come a time where the pain is so big of the discrepancy between I don't have any Bitcoin and you do have a Bitcoin. And then it will become, I'm not spending any Bitcoin, so maybe a lot of people will come with torches and pitchforks my way because I have a lot and I'm not willing to share. Just like the Quintilian effect, that some people have all the assets, all the money, and at some point the 99% has almost nothing compared to them, and the mob turns into a real mob. So I don't know exactly what would turn there, but those are some hypotheticals of the effects of that behavior. But I do feel that because of this gravitational pull of our behaviors and what we're comfortable, people need to be forced because of pain to research Bitcoin. And it was, in my case, a little bit different, but I became this Bitcoin evangelist because of pain, Again, it wasn't out of necessity to be moved into money, but previously I had a lot of pain. And when I studied Bitcoin, I thought like I have to do this and nothing else. Like, this is so important. But
yeah,
I assume people will just have to be forced because we are just stuck in our ways so many of the time, so much of the time.
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority of people, I completely agree with you, are going to need to be forced by sufficient pain. And it feels to me, I could be wrong, and I don't put a particular timeline on it, but it feels to me like we're getting closer, right? I mean, I think more and more people are really struggling to afford their rent or their groceries or what have you. And people are going to have to look for a plan B because, you know, the S&P 500 is only keeping up with the inflation of the M2 money supply. And once people awaken to that and they see it in their actual lives, like speaking of, you know, tied to the real world, it's going to become clear that they have to find something else. And I think Bitcoin is obviously the solution here, or we wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah, I hope that pain will come and people will search for a solution. But unfortunately, our club is not that big. And even though we saw Argentina with hyperinflation, almost Africa, like Turkey, everywhere, that people felt that pain a lot. And even Lebanon, like the Bitcoin Way founders, like they experienced this. Does that mean that 50% or more are Bitcoiners there? No.
No.
They dealt with the pain in any means that they had. And just because they weren't exposed to this particular solution. But the point is not to capture everybody right now, I think. The point is that our club should get bigger and bigger. So, yeah, just doing my part, one article at a time.
Yeah. That's all we can ask for. You said another quote from the article. You said, to be an effective store of value, money needs to preserve or grow its purchasing power over time. A person should not earn the same money twice. When I have savings, I should not be forced to actively manage it. I love this. And I've heard variations of this, but you know, a person should not have to earn the same money twice. I guess what I'm like, what led us down this path of having to earn the same money twice? If you make $5,000 a month or 5,000 euros a month or what have you, and that you may still have the same nominal value. I think people understand that, but your ability to use that at that, you know, value of when you earn it is being completely eroded. But it's become normalized. I'm curious, like, what do you think is it just like one big psyop from the central banks and the powers that be? Because I know so many people in my life like this. And this was me several years ago, right? Like, you have to invest your money. You have to put your money at risk in order to earn more money. So that way you can still afford things in the future and retire. I mean, is that just in your view? Well, that's just a bug of the fiat system, or is this just absolute brainwashing?
I would say it's a bug, and people are just taking advantage of that bug, because even when fiat became fiat, it became out of fixing a problem of moving gold or any other physical thing through space. So we've solved that with paper, claiming to be something that it is really not. But some forces decided to abuse that bug because it was introduced that, okay, we're splitting the medium of exchangeness and store of value from money. But previously, when we called money, it was both. And it is still should be both. But because the medium of exchange degrades because of somebody exploits the bug, that means you're forced to store it into something that we don't use as medium of exchange that often. So you can store it, but that introduces more fees and more centralization, like all sorts of things. And it's a virtual cycle, like one feeds the other and the other feeds the first thing. And at some point it will break. That was for thousands and thousands of years. But where it became And that is also comes from Seyfedin Amos. Like he says that you don't have to spend your earn your money twice. Like you already earned it being the best version of yourself. If you want to be a poet, you should focus on your craft. If you want to be a lawyer, you should focus on that. If you want to be a sportsman, if you want to be a businessman, whatever it is, you should stick to your domain and the things that are related to it. You shouldn't go and learn the banking system and what should I invest in and like all of this crap that we have to deal with, and how many people really, really are passionate about this and how many are, again, forced. That's why I'm saying the market is trying to solve this problem, but some people in the core of it are exploiting this bug. And it's, I wouldn't say it's brainwashing, but it's just because of the design of the system, it becomes this addiction. And now you can say it's kind of brainwashing, but I wouldn't put it first. It's brainwashing happens after somebody created this bug and can exploit the system.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's just... It's a sad state of affairs, because I know so many people in my life who are working incredibly hard, and the way they see their options are, I can continue to cut back and diminish my lifestyle, or I can hire someone else to effectively put my money into an index fund, and hopefully that just sort of keeps pace. I can earn a little bit more each year. And I mean, many are already scraping by, and I think many more in the next decade who are you know, still kind of comfortable are going to be barely scraping by, and they're going to have no idea why that's the case. But I think you just hit on such an interesting point. It's this digit addiction that we experience, and you walk through in your article like a number of flavors of digit addicts. So you've got like real estate. You talk about like video game, you know, gamers, like people who are playing video games, like they're addicted to their tokens. And then one that you talked about that is near and dear to our hearts at the Bitcoin Way are the custodians. So like, you know, the example you gave was the ETFs, but I think the same apply. If you've got your Bitcoin on Coinbase, you can log into Coinbase, and it's, you know, I'm sure they spend a lot of time and energy on the UI to make it, you know, something that you want to go check 20 times a day. How am I doing? But you said, give me your Bitcoin in my custody because you are inadequate to hold it yourself. Give me your Bitcoin and I will give you digits. So our team could not be more emphatic in our agreement with you. My concern, so all of the these flavors of addicts that you call out, I think are interesting. This one is the most concerning to me. And I think it's because the people who are trusting their Bitcoin with a custodian, or just in a suboptimal custody arrangement where they're sharing keys or they're KYCing themselves or whatever, it's like they're so close to understanding. They understand some sort of conceptual element of Bitcoin that, hey, the number's going to go up because the monetary system's broken or whatever it is that they understand. But the notion of freedom money that you control, that you alone custody and have access to and can use censorship free and permissionlessly as you desire. Like it's like that still hasn't quite sunk in. What are the concerns you have with that? Because I'll just tell you, like, my concern is that Bitcoin may end central banks. It may do all sorts of things that are like chief objectives in my view, but that it might not live up to its ability to be freedom money for all if people don't understand this concept. So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yep. That is the big fear on my side also. Like, when you understand Bitcoin, you understand that you live in a system that is an extractive system from every point, from absolutely everywhere. And you're trying your second job of earning your money twice is really to put patches on this bleeding, because they're bleeding you slowly. Because if they attack you full frontally, like, oh, we'll print whatever we want, this is just full frontal attack, and it's too obvious. But the dynamic of the system is, what is tolerable? of people not going back at us and just dealing with this management? Because if you have one cut, you say, okay, I'll patch it up. But now, because of the nature of the system is cracking more and more, and there are 1,000 cuts on our bodies, we are trying to stay alive at this point, and people will wake up, hopefully. But my fear is that this custodianship is bringing a lot of people into Bitcoin. That's undeniable. Even if I don't like it, if we were in the stage of cypherpunks and in forums and there weren't brokerages and those type of things, multiple of people will be in Bitcoin currently. But they bring attention to it. The whole thing is that we need to still have a balance of the whole network from the ownership and from the people that are running nodes into this network. Because if the balance skews into their favor, I think the system will win. Like, again, but you don't want to finance your enemies, really. You want them to be in the same network, but I'm not going to give my money to my enemy. I'm going to have my own money, and I want him to use the same money, and we're in the same network, but I'm not going to give him my value to store and to do whatever. And this is, again, the same bug that is in fiat. We're introducing it in Bitcoin here. And if you're just comfortable here, you're going to be diluted again slowly, so it's tolerable until they have such an enormous power again and the system needs to reshape itself. That's why I think it's extremely important, the thing that people say, the volatility is a problem. I think that's an extremely important feature in Bitcoin, that we need to destroy everybody on the upside, but we also need to destroy everybody on the downside, that we need to cleanse this system out of this fiat mentality and behaviors and all sorts of things, because that's how they'll capture a lot of the ownership. Look what Michael Saylor is doing. Like, I think that he's not attacking the Bitcoin dollar at all. He's protecting the Bitcoin dollar through Bitcoin, but he's attacking everybody that does not have any Bitcoin. So anybody that gives him money, he's speculatively attacking them, and is speculatively attacking everybody that doesn't have dollars. So the people that don't have dollars are the worst in this case, but even the people that are giving him money, at the end, he has the Bitcoin. Even not him, but that's the basic idea. So it's speculatively attacking all of those people. And in the process, he's building infrastructure in the fiat system that all the fees go to the banks, to the ETFs, to his stocks, to managers. Nothing moves in the Bitcoin other than a few transactions coming his way. Like, what is it he's strengthening? And because people are hypnotized from this price tag of Bitcoin, they completely miss everything else. And I think that we should make Bitcoin attractive, not just with the price, but everything else to shine a little bit more spotlight on all those features.
Yeah, no, I think the last thing you said there is maybe the most important. And I think my next question for you is, do you think there is a cultural component that is at play here? Because, you know, 150 years ago, people would, you know, spend silver, save in gold, is a combination of both, perhaps. And it was rather intuitive, I think, to many people, or has been throughout history, that you get to possess your own money, you get to use it as you see fit. No, you don't need to put it at a bank. I mean, I know banks have been around in some capacity, but, you know, with sort of different features over many centuries. I think maybe a concern I have is that culturally we've become so so far removed from a society where individual responsibility is rewarded and encouraged, that now for people to even imagine the idea of them, they are better than a bank at custodying their wealth and they can take ownership, and that they might need that ownership or desire that ownership and sovereignty over their wealth, because the bank might not always be there and the government backstop might not always be there. And by the way, banks don't really have your money to begin with. So to me, it feels like just this cultural deterioration that's taken place that is probably blinding many people to these concepts that you're talking about. Is that something you would agree with or expand upon?
Yeah, and I would say just the culture is how it shows that it's all ingrained in us. Because I talked previously that it is about the habit, but if we trace down the habit, if you do actions, you can change your habits. But when you use the same habits, now this kind of becomes your identity. And when this type of identity becomes common in a particular group, now it becomes a culture. So in order to change this culture that we are getting used to the fiat mentality and how we have to deal there, yes, you're right. But we can change culture, all of us at the same time. So we need to start at the lowest level, that we should change action. And the first action is self-custody. The second action is running an alt or whatever. Like all of those things that a true Bitcoiner knows, that every single one of us, even if you look at yourself, you didn't start with everything. It's just impossible. But you started somewhere. Then it became a habit. Now it's second nature, so it's part of your identity. And now you can spread it to other people and everything else, and you can attach more and more habits to it. And then we will create this culture of the Bitcoin country that is global, the only culture that is truly global. And that's how we will outperform the other culture. Because here it's nice. The other one is extracted and preyed upon, and all the fighting, even if it's not nation-state wars, is just fighting for some digits that somebody controls. And this mentality, I'm not going to help you because I'm against you. And if I have for me, that means I'm okay and I don't care about my neighbors. And in Bitcoin, you know, this is completely inversed. That if I have more, that means you have more. And if I want you to succeed, because if you go do the work, you increase my stock. But if I do the work and we cooperate, now 1+1 is not 2, it's 11. And we amplify all of our efforts. But going back to it, you can't start with culture. You start with actions, then those actions need to become behavior and identity, and then it will slowly shift that culture into what it should be.
Yeah, my brother and I have a lot of interesting conversations related to, we're both sort of conspiratorial, and or at least that's what the mainstream folks would call us. And, you know, it's like this switch has to be flipped, you know, that like you just sort of have to be open to seeing the world in a different way. And it takes some of that upfront learning and conviction before it really, like, for me, it feels like even along my Bitcoin journey, it's just been in like the last 6 months where I'm like, I am way more open-minded to so many different things. And so as I learn, I'm much more readily able to apply that new knowledge to what I'm doing, how I'm living my life. And it's very freeing. It's liberating to, you know, once that shift takes place. But I agree with you, you have to like have these building blocks in place. And I don't think culture, I think that there are people who can influence culture. I think the project we're going to talk about, you know, that you're working on at the end here, I think those sorts of things can influence, you know, many individuals at once. But I think at the end of the day, culture changes by individuals taking that sort of knowledge in and changing their own life and talking to friends and family and loved ones and helping them begin to reshape their life. Right. I think it's easy to hope and pray for like some big sweeping change that everyone just completely gets reoriented onto a Bitcoin standard or what have you. But I don't think that's the way it plays out. I think it just takes individual people making individual decisions for the betterment of their lives. And it's that will spread organically within their little world. And if, you know, a million of us are doing that globally, hopefully we begin to see more and more change on a cultural level.
Yeah. One more comment about the custodians. And it's kind of in the article said, but in different words, that let's say, for example, to illustrate what they're going to do with custodians. And right now, can you see the line between two of my fingers? The thumb and the index?
No.
Okay. Explain.
Well, I mean, I can't see a physical line, but I see the abstraction that you're referencing.
Yeah. And most people would say yes, so kudos to you. That yes, there is a physical, there isn't a physical line, but there's an abstraction. Our mind projects something, and people are manipulated that if you see, for example, some type of a digit, let's say this is my local currency, that you don't see the paper, you see a number on it, so you value not the number on the paper and not the paper that's printed on it. Because if I replace the number, the paper doesn't change, but the number, what you value, completely changes. And that's, again, an abstraction. And the other thing where this seeps into Bitcoin is, for example, do you see this? It's a marker, but do you see it?
Yes.
Okay, this is exactly how custodians are going to lie to us. You don't see it. I see it. I see the physical thing. Now you see a projection on your screen. And that's exactly what the custodians are going to do. They are going to project a digit on your screen and you thinking that you have Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a bare asset. So if you don't bear it, you don't have it. And that's the thing that we need to protect the whole system from. Just wanted to illustrate in a different way our concerns in the ecosystem. But I completely agree. People need to understand those two important differences, because if they don't, they will exploit this bug for some other group or entity benefit, just like Michael Saylor is doing.
Yeah, and I think those are great illustrations. You got me on the second one. The banks, you have your digits in your checking account or whatever, but that money is not precisely there, and or at least it's not there for everyone all at once if it needed to be. It's an important. I think that if you hear that, you might say, okay, I get it. Okay, fractional reserve. But if you understand the implications of what that means, you really think deeply on it. I mean, it has profound consequences for the solvency of our financial system. And I think more people need to wake up. Yeah, I want to touch back on you talked about the volatility as a feature, not a bug, of Bitcoin. And my tendency is to kind of write, well, people are volatile, Bitcoin's not volatile. And that's maybe a cute thing to say, but not particularly helpful when people are evaluating it as an investment, which I don't believe it to be. I just believe it to be money that will continue to appreciate in value based on its merits. But I'm curious, I imagine you anticipate a day where Bitcoin's dollar or euro or whatever currency denominated value is far less volatile. Is sort of the point you're making that in the interim, while it is volatile, this is an opportunity, because someday people are just going to earn. I think they're going to earn in Bitcoin. They're going to spend in Bitcoin. It's just going to be used as money. And I think that's the world we're hoping for. And certainly what Breeze's is working toward. In the meantime, is sort of your part of your point that you have this early opportunity if you're willing to invest the time and energy to understand what it is, what the problems are that Bitcoin solves, you can take advantage of that upside volatility over the next 10 years or 20 years or however long that volatility to the upside continues.
Well, my point there is that I do think that the volatility will decrease at some point, but I also see where it might increase with more people kind of waking up but it's not going to increase just on the upside. It will increase on both ways, because you can see even in Weimar, the chart, like the price of gold, it was violent. And I bet that in those periods of the true hyperinflation, the central bank accumulated the most because of that volatility. Yeah. Because they had the printer. But in Bitcoin, because nobody has the printer and can exploit, what happens there is that on the upside, a lot of degenerate custodians come into play. And when some of them go bankrupt, just like FTX, just like Luna, it was just a domino effect that started into the last bear market. But what was the best day of selling hardware wallets? When FTX collapsed. So that has a very important feature of going down violently. Because if it is slow, look at the ETH chart compared to Bitcoin. They are getting diluted slowly by slowly, and they still think they're better or whatever. That is exactly why the 2% inflation game works, because it's slow. But if it is violent, that makes things undeniable, that then you're forced, again, going back to pain, then you're forced to go and learn, or even if you don't learn and you know not to use this way, like you go and get tricked into another company, another custodian, and then at some point some people will actually run self-custody. That's it. But I'm saying those are important things, that they need to be violent, because this Bitcoin thing is a very big deleveraging force in the fiat ecosystem. Because if somebody gets leverage, you can be liquidated out if on the upside, or if you short it, which is even stupider. But that's a very important thing if we want to get to the Bitcoin future of everything denominated in Bitcoin globally. Because at that future, then being used as medium of exchange will decrease more and more the volatility. It's just because the market is repricing with every transaction what how much it costs. So that has a stabilizing effect into the system. But I think because we're getting closer and closer to the printers, I think even if right now the volatility kind of decreases, at some point it will become violent, but it really depends what are you doing then, and are you prepared for those moments? Because the most greedy people, the most vicious people are still thinking that they can co-opt it, and they're trying to do the digital gold capture 2.0. But at some point, when they actually see that they are losing the grip of their value, and their value is control. It's not, I need to have the most money, because they don't have the most money. They have all the money of everyone. Like, you are more powerful if you outperform me. But if I give you my value, you don't care if you're weaker, because you can use my value the way that you want. And that's what banks are. That's what custodians are. That they're not better or stronger than all of us, but they have all the value stored in them, and they can exploit everyone. That's why everyone else is weaker in this system. I'm really concerned, but I'm saying I hope volatility increases, does not decrease, because this will preserve what we're fighting for. When it goes down, it forges real true Bitcoiners. On the upside, people that are celebrating and stuff like that, the degenerates will come in and those will be bankrupted. It's very important, because if it is stable, it's not going to attract degenerates. That means there is not going to be a crash. So there is not going to be a pruning of the system. You're not introducing enough, how do you call this in nature? The word I kind of forgot. It doesn't matter. But you're not flushing out the people that are lying into the system if it is not volatile. If it is stable, the people that are exploiting things secretly are not going to be revealed.
Yeah, I like that analogy. The idea of the downswings, like the violent downswings being a feature, because you hit on something that I haven't really thought about this way, but it's not merely having more people who buy Bitcoin. Like, that's not necessarily the Bitcoin adoption that is helpful. I mean, if you want the number to go up, yeah, having buy side pressure is great. But forging real Bitcoiners who understand it and can take those downswings and weeding everyone else out as you go. And then as some of those people who are weeded out on a downswing that might happen, you know, this past week or whatever, I don't pay close enough attention to price, but I know we had a big dip. Those people who got weeded out might have their conviction sort of reinforced when Bitcoin drops from 200K down to 150K, because they already made the mistake of selling at 85 or whatever, 82. And now they've gone through a cycle to understand, I shouldn't have done that. This drop from 200 to 150 isn't the end. It's going to a million or 10 or whatever they anticipate. Like, the regardless of the dollar denominated value, it's going up. And I understand that it's going up because of a broken system that it solves for.
Yeah. And the word I was forgetting is entropy. Like, if there is no entropy, that means that the parasites and the bad stuff are still into the system. But if you have entropy, that means that the worst is flushed out. You say that a person that is flushed out might rethink. Yeah, that's one way. But even if he does not rethink, it's also good for him to not come in until he rethinks. So it's perfectly fine for him to play with his fiat structures and stuff like that, to be outside of Bitcoin at this stage than him coming in, because we want the proper people. It's all about freedom going up. It's not about number going up.
Yeah, I think that's a really hopeful way of framing it too, because obviously Bitcoin is for anyone. It's a permissionless network, but we will be much better served carrying fewer communists into the future with us than a bunch of communists accepting Bitcoin just because it's the new medium of exchange and they're constantly trying to fight a new battle. The more people we get to really fundamentally understand it, to embrace the free market that is Bitcoin, I think the better. I could go on with you all day about this. I want to get to your project in a moment, but I'd love a quick update on Breeze. For anyone who doesn't know Breeze and your role there, why don't you just give a quick overview and then tell us anything exciting you've got going on?
Yeah. Well, I am the first person that is in the team that is not a developer. So I can't speak into the code itself, but what we did since we last saw each other is, I told you that we were building an SDK that's built on the Lightning Network. And we talked about the dynamic there of managing channels and stuff like that. And people are still not completely used to this new interface and this new thing. So I have some, what does it mean that I have to open a channel, close a channel, those types of things. We're just not used to it. It's a completely new dynamic. We did create the product in such a way that it's a non-custodial. Like we talked, if somebody implements our code, the software development kit, that means that you do not become a bank. So you do not become a custodian of your users. Let's say you are a game app, and if you integrate our code, the people that transact there, they have their own keys on their own devices. You're not a bank. And that is the way that we need to promote this. But because the custodians path is what we are used to, and mainly on the UI side, that somebody deals with that complexity of channels, that we understood, okay, there is another product fit for the market. And we built another software development kit that is based on the Liquid sidechain. We are still a Lightning network solution, but imagine if you're familiar with Aqua.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but imagine that right now you can build an Aqua wallet using the Liquid sidechain with the Lightning network, but you're not just a wallet. You can insert it into any app again. And now this has the benefit of not managing channels into your interface. You just deal with, oh, I need to send, I need to receive. And because of this, even we were a little bit surprised how quickly we got adopted from the market. And people needed this solution much more because of the user experience. The good thing is that even this is still, if you implement it, your users have the keys. It's still, there's a trust profile out there, the Liquid sidechain profile of the functionaries and companies that are managing that sidechain. But it's still, you can say that it is non-custodial or self-custodial because users have the key and not somebody else. So those were now two SDKs or two solutions that you can use, and we just leave it to the market because we thought also, just like we talked with the custodians, we need to bring people in and lead them down the path of self-custody, because if we give them all of it, okay, sit down now and you need to learn for 3 days how to optimize and learn everything, this is a slow grind. We are doing it, but because there are two solutions, now you can implement them side by side and people just do the steps one by one. And the good thing for the Lightning Network is that it's not something that you can trade. It's just part of the Bitcoin ecosystem. So that is what is new. We are not an application anymore. Still, the app is available, but we're focusing more and more on we want to execute the payment, and you need to just build an app and focus on your users.
That's amazing, man. I think this is the sort of building that we just need to see more of. I wish it's something we talk about internally as a team is like we were, Tony, our founder, was talking about how you know, disappointing it was to see like an empty mempool. You know, I think a couple of weeks ago it was just a ghost town, and people are, I guess the concern is Bitcoin is a store of value, and like I save in Bitcoin, and I believe that to be using Bitcoin, saving in it. But part of the sovereignty is being able to leverage and use that Bitcoin, not take on leverage, but leverage it as a medium of exchange, as a payment method. And I'm curious, where do you think we're at? So like you've seen like the S curve of adoption where it's, you know, store of value increases. And then after that, the medium of exchange sort of has the same S curve. Where do you think we are in terms of medium of exchange adoption? It feels like we're very early to me. Maybe it's because I'm not surrounded by any stores or merchants who accept Bitcoin as payment. And I only make payment because I'm in Bitcoin, you know, and buy, you know, hardware, gear, or whatever. Where do you think we are on that S curve of adoption as a medium of exchange?
Two things. I think we are extremely early. Like, I think we are in 0.1%. Yeah, people might have Bitcoin, but how many are in cold storage? I saw some numbers that only 3 million people have a hardware wallet. So even if you double that, it's 6 million people. So that's not even 0.1% out of the 8 billion, if my math is right. So we are extremely early in this phase. The second point is that I don't think that we have a S-curve for this particular thing. Because Bitcoin is not a technology. Yeah, Bitcoin is money. And I don't think it will follow the pattern of the S-curve. For now, I really like the power law model. But at some point, I do believe that it will break on the upside when, as I said, enough pain is in the world globally, but we are big enough community that we are there with the solution, because Bitcoin is not everywhere currently. People have heard of the name, but we are not there with the solution. Install this, do this. It's completely easy to use, so you're protected and I'll heal your pain. And those are the two things that I believe. Extremely early, but we'll see how it develops. And what I like really about the power law is that the increase of price is directly connected based on the numbers coming in into this network. So that is the important thing, that people should come in. Yes, through all sorts of non-pure ways, let's say, but the ecosystem needs to grow, and at some point that big pain is coming for everyone. Because I think 2 years ago, when the Canadians and in America people were crying in their cars and stuff like that, TikTok viral videos, where are they now? Like, they kind of died out. So they kind of got used to a hole. There was some relief, but the next pain will be bigger than what we experienced during COVID. And we just need to be there with the solution. We just need to capture more and more people. That is what's important. I don't care really about the institutions, because the institutions have the biggest bags, but I care about the people. Like, if we don't save people, what are we doing? Are we doing another central type of bank? Like, oh, like somebody has 5 million Bitcoin and the rest don't have 0.001. Well, it will still be diluted, that one with the 5 million, because he cannot print more for himself. But it will be a long time continuing their tyranny. And I even in the past saw one of your tweets from the Bitcoin Way that Bitcoin is not here to prolong the fiat system. It's here to destroy it, or something like that. And I said it will do both, just because of that dynamic. The people with the biggest bags will buy a lot of Bitcoin at some point, and that will continue their domination for a little bit more than if they die now.
Yeah, that's my concern with the strategic reserve. Besides, you know, is that it empowers government. You know, that they take on the scarcest asset, the best form of money ever to exist. And I mean, it would certainly pump my bags, but I've no interest in it, because my end objective is end central banks. You know, enable people to take in custody their own freedom money and to use it as they see fit. I envision a world of just massive self-sovereignty. Like, that's what I want. You can't have that with central banks. You can't have that with inept governments growing and growing and growing. And so I think you're unfortunately probably right that Bitcoin will or the some of the adoption we're seeing in the institutions and government will prolong the dollar. But I think ultimately it will end that system as well.
Yeah.
Hey,
little note about this, how to view it. You don't have to be against the central banks. That's the beauty of Bitcoin, that if you're against central banks, you're putting a target on your back. But I am for the people. I am for the self-sovereignty. The other stuff is killing itself. You don't have to do anything to end the central banks. So let's not do the full frontal attack. Let's just help people. The other thing will kill itself out of its own weight. So that's the beauty. You don't have to get your hands dirty. You just liberate and free people. That's what I'm focusing on.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair way of framing it. Like, my goal isn't for some government solution to the end of a central bank, but rather empowering, like it kind of goes back to my thesis on individuals making that decision, the switch being flipped, telling friends and family. Like it really, like the more bottoms up the movement is, I think the better for everyone, the more peaceful it is, which is obviously desirable for all of us.
Yeah.
Okay, man. Tell us about your project. So you sent me a link to a Geyser Fund page. Why don't you tell everyone what it is, and then let's talk about how you're going to go about this.
Yeah. Well, it is in Geyser just because you have global money. Like we did not create any type of crowdfunding fiat website or our own website, because anybody that wants to donate to this project, you can do it through Geyser and you don't have any borders other than being on Earth. So yeah, but the project is the following. Now, I kind of understood in this dynamic what we talked about currently, that more and more people need to be exposed to Bitcoin in a deeper way than all it has a price. Like the price proved itself for 16 years and will continue to prove itself. But we need to dive deeper into it. The other thing was that I'm a Bulgarian and the things that are happening in our country now are kind of becoming a strong network and our community is growing stronger, not only on, yeah, we have some Bitcoin somewhere, but we're building stuff. And I wanted to connect the Bitcoin community with the international Bitcoin community, with the Bulgarian Bitcoin community, and internally all the projects that are happening in Bulgaria to unite them in one thing. And that one thing is this particular project that achieves both of those goals. We're going to create a documentary. We are creating a documentary that will record the unique project that we're doing here. And what I love about those projects is that none of them have anything to do with the Bitcoin price. Yes, we are tracking the price, but everything that we are doing is developing the network. And we are heavily biased towards developing the medium of exchange infrastructure, even if we're not ready, even if people are not ready to spend and it's right now because of HODL mentality. We are creating this here and more people are using it in everyday lives. And I want to create Bulgaria's Bitcoin hub to be known in the international stage. And in Geyser is where we are going to post videos every month, news and stuff like that, what we are currently doing. But the movie at the end, I think it will be released next year. We'll see exactly when, but that's the overview of the project. A real full-length documentary about the Bitcoin community. And it is going to be called Build on Bitcoin, the Bulgarian Journey.
I love this, man. I'm so excited to see it. I'm curious. So like, it seems to me that, we've seen like El Salvador obviously adopting Bitcoin and Bhutan, like these smaller countries. My understanding is Bulgaria is one of the smaller economies in Europe.
Yep.
And it feels like there's a pretty vibrant Bitcoin economy there. And I had George Manilov on the podcast a while back, over at, Bota Plavdiv. So I think, the top club in, Bulgaria. And like just some of the things that they're doing and the way they're trying to integrate Bitcoin into, what otherwise would just be a pretty typical soccer, football club, not soccer club. Do you think there's something to be said about maybe like the size of the Bulgarian economy that seems to be fostering a bigger and more vibrant Bitcoin community and economy?
I don't think that is the biggest factor. I'm not saying it's not a factor, but I don't think that is the biggest. For some reason, just a few psychopaths were in Bulgaria itself. Like the people that are relentless, that will not be bought, decided, or let's build individually. And the other thing from a regulation standpoint, our accounting is that if, let's say, you buy Bitcoin and then you sell it for some asset, then it's a taxable event. But if you come here and you buy goods, let's say you go and buy sticks in the store, it's not a taxable event. So that's very beneficial for us to focus here on this. But the main thing, as I said, there are a few psychopaths in the core of everything that are pushing everything to happen faster on the infrastructure level. For example, one of the guys created the first ever conference specifically for merchants. And in that conference, we talk about the tax law, how you can treat it when you put Bitcoin in the books. The second thing is how you can promote what are the channels so you can connect to the Bitcoin community and to place yourself in the proper position that I'm a merchant that is accepting Bitcoin for payment. And the third thing is technically how to do it. What are the wallets? What are the apps that you can use or an SDK like ours? Even one of the solutions that is implementing our code currently, we'll see if it is going to be ready for the next conference. But that is one guy. The second guy, for example, is there is a website that is ordering food from restaurants. But there are two centralized companies that are delivering food to your door here. And they are nobody in that market. But because of Bitcoin, now they have first dibs of all the Bitcoiners that are there because they're the only solution that you can pay on your website and your food comes to your door that you paid with sats. Not only that, but because of the relationship with the restaurants, now they give them POS terminals that even if you go to the physical location, you can pay with Bitcoin. And those are just two, I would say, entities that are pushing things to happen. And because now they are connected together, now what I said, 1 + 1 is not 2. Now 1 + 1 is 11. And the ecosystem is growing more. And that is what I am trying to do. I want to be the glue. I'm not doing, I would say, a lot, but the main thing that I'm trying to do is to connect 1 + 1 + 1 + 1, all of those psychopaths, to connect them into one thing. And now the growth of the ecosystem grows exponentially. We're just at the level that I hope to connect to the international Bitcoin community.
Well, I've made a donation. I'll make sure to link in the show notes to the Geyser Fund. I've got one more question for you, though. And this is sort of one I started asking a few months ago. I don't think I asked you on the first show.
No.
What is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with this opinion?
I don't know if you offend Bitcoiners with this, but because of my fiat experience, before my Bitcoin days, I knew and I understood for myself that justice is an illusion. Justice is this abstractional thing that, just like I said, the line between my fingers, that we created for some reasoning. Good or bad, that's debatable. We think it's good, but you don't know. And if you get stuck into this justice, what is just and stuff like that, you're going to be exploited in a different way, because the universe is not just. The universe has laws and actions and consequences. So if you're trying to make some just thing, preaching on high virtue and stuff like that, you may be very surprised or exploited in different ways, because just the universe doesn't work that way. And I found out this the hard way. Like I talked, my mother was killed because of money. And going through the justice system you see all the exploits that are in this justice system that has nothing to do with justice. But you still have to deal with the problems that you're facing. And if you blame the things that are unjust, then you're not going to increase and deal with the situation the best way possible. But if you just continue to fight, increase your skills, and find a way that whether it's just or unjust, it really doesn't matter from my personal point of view. Like, the point is that you go and you protect your resources the way that is moral, ethical, and the best way to do that is with Bitcoin.
I love it. I'm going to have to think on that one, man. That's an interesting concept, but appreciate it. Ivan, why don't you give a handoff, tell people where they can find you, where they can find the article, Breeze, and of course, the fund for your documentary.
Yeah. Well, Breeze is everywhere in the Lightning space. People like us. So we have a website in our Telegram group. Anybody that wants to insert non-custodial payments into their apps is very welcome. Whether it's me or anybody from the team, we are very responsive. So very glad to welcome anybody that does this, just for our own collective self-sovereignty on the second layer also. The other thing is you can reach out to me on Noster with the articles on Twitter. My handle is Naku2000. And the last thing about the project, if somebody goes into Geyser, search for Bulgarian Journey, and you'll find our project that is called Build on Bitcoin. And there are a few videos, some explanations, and I think in a week or two, we're going to put out two rewards for people that donate some sats that some people might qualify.
Awesome. Everyone, go check that out. Send them a few sats. They're doing some amazing work. Ivan, great speaking with you again, my friend. Let's do this again sometime here in the future.
Thanks for having me again.
Have a great day.
And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Ivan. Love this guy and everything that he's doing. Go check out their Geyser Fund page. Check out the article he wrote. Check out Breeze. Go follow him on X. If you're enjoying the podcast, do me a huge favor. Feed the algorithm. Give us a subscribe, like, comment, share it with someone who you think might be interested in this sort of content. We would really appreciate that. You can also follow us on X. We're at the Bitcoin Way _. I'm on there as well, at the other M Jordan. And if you need help with proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin, which you likely do if you're like most people, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast, where you can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We would love to talk with you, explain in detail how we help. We also assist with online privacy, privacy phones, and a Plan B residency option. So everything you need for your self-sovereignty needs. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.